Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
Welcome back, hustlers. This is Andrew Morgans, your host here on Startup Hustle. I have Liz with us today. I'm really excited to hear a little bit more of her story. And I'd like to say thank you to our sponsor today, Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordable. Liz, say hello.
Hello, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're super glad to have you on the show. And I knew right away when I was going to be a host on the Startup Hustle, I wanted to have a chat and give you a chance to meet, the Startup Hustle's family, but also a lot of my fans and followers that, you know, follow me across social different channels. They're getting to meet me and a lot of the people I work with every day on a different level. So why don't we just start off? Just give me a little bit of your background. I know you're at Ecom Engine now, but I think we should start before that. How did you get into digital in general?
It was weird, right? So I worked for a title insurance company, a really big one, and it went bankrupt. And during the end days, I was assisting some people that were consulting to sort of dissolve the company. And I stayed on to help them out. And they basically said, you've got this duty and this duty, but the rest of the time, we just need you around, but you can do whatever you want on the computer. And I was like, I've heard about this thing called Twitter. So I got a Twitter account, which is still not something that I use a whole lot. I troll a lot on Twitter, and like, I don't troll, but I read Twitter, but I don't actually tweet a whole lot. But through Twitter, I got connected with some local creative people who were freelance writers. And I was like, that sounds like a pretty cool job. So I started looking around Craigslist, and I found an ad for a top 10 website. And I think that my first article was the top 10 hairstyles. And I think I got paid $15 for it. Okay. And that was my first foray into writing for the internet. And I ended up going to work for the guy who ran that website. He also owned an SEO company. So I started learning about SEO. And during that time, that was 2008, 2009. So that's when you could basically write anything. As long as it wasn't keyword stuffed, as long as it wasn't trash, like complete trash, but you could write a novelty blog and link back to your law client or your dental client, and it would still help their ranking because that's what the algorithm was back then. And so I had a blast. I think that during my most productive time, I wrote during any given month, any week, I wrote 24 blog posts every week. And they had to be 350 to 500 words. And I won the 100 article award on eZines like 4 months in a row, writing under a pseudonym, of course, because that's what you do when you SEO, right? And I learned very early with freelance writing that you can't really have any vanity about it because you're rarely going to be able to put your name on anything. But I started I worked for them for a while, and then I decided to go back to grad school because I had gone back to school to finish my bachelor's degree when I worked for the big company. And I was having a lot of fun, and I just decided, you know, I'm going to get my master's degree. I'm going to be paying for it until I die, but I'm really going to like this. And I had a blast, and I wrote about everything from mesothelioma to the top 10 weirdest laws about kissing, or, you know, it was just crazy stuff that I was writing, and I was doing actually pretty well. So this is around 2011 when I graduated from the master's program at Virginia Commonwealth University with a 4.0. Thank you very much.
Okay.
I did my thesis on J.D. Salinger in World War II. So that was fun. Defended that puppy. Nobody wants to read it, but that's okay. I wrote it. It's 75 pages long. but I was sort of getting into my writing for myself. I ended up co-writing a book about smoothie recipes with the guy who owned the SEO company. He was a big mentor of mine. And then I ended up getting two book deals with a different publisher. I had an option with the first publisher. So I said, Mom, you've got to write these books with me because I can't put my name on them. So actually there are two cookbooks out there with my mother's name on them that we wrote together. One about slow cooking desserts in your slow cooker and one about holidays in your slow cooker. So if you look up Joanne Downing on Amazon, she's got those out of print books credited to her. That's my
mom.
Got
them on Amazon?
Yeah, they were on Amazon. So
cool. I didn't know you were an author.
Yeah. So I don't count cookbooks for me because they weren't horribly, I mean, you had to get creative because there's only so many ways you can cook a dessert in a slow cooker. And honestly, it's easier to bake a cake in the oven than it is to do it in a slow cooker. You've got to have a springform pan. You've got to it's just like super complicated, but they wanted a book. None of the books have made any money ever. That's okay.
Why didn't have somebody good helping you on Amazon?
Maybe the books weren't all that good. I don't know. I mean, I do use the holiday one for slow cooker ideas, but so all that happened, I went to work for an advertising agency for a year just to get some practical experience in a really fast paced environment. Got into like the RFP kind of like answering government RFPs to try to get marketing warrant for government agencies, was pretty successful at that. But
that's a whole thing in of itself. Like it's right. Government like RFPs.
Learn to write all over again and write it seven times, you know, because seven copies. And I think I won that job because I ended up driving to the airport at like 90 miles an hour and getting it in the right hands and all that kind of stuff. It was just one of those crazy times. So after that, that lasted a year. And then I went back to freelance writing, and I did that until absolutely very, very recently, like last month. And I still write. It's just that I'm trying to write for myself in my free time rather than be a pen for hire. So let's back up to 2014. In 2014, I got a LinkedIn message from a guy asking me to edit an ebook for a company called Ecom Engine. And just to give you an idea of the Amazon space at that time, it was on the four emails you should send post-purchase to your buyers on Amazon.
In 2014, I had been helping brands on Amazon for 2 years at that point.
And in 2014, I got that assignment and said, wait, there are third-party sellers on Amazon? I had no idea. My mind was blown. So you're already helping brands. You already understand Amazon well enough to help people succeed. And I'm like, I didn't even know that people could sell on Amazon. I thought it all came from Amazon. I was totally, totally ignorant. And I just sort of, something clicked and I was obsessed. So I did that. And I said, if you've got any other work, at the same time, I was writing clickbait for a couple of actually pretty prominent clickbait sites, actually under my own name. So if you Google Elizabeth Fickinger, you'll find some of that stuff. none of it's terrible. Their editorial guidelines were actually extremely strict, but I was also writing about chemical storage tanks and roofing. And up until last month, actually, I did all the content coordination for two local magazines too. So like I've tried to get all the experience I could. And it, what's funny about it is that I did freelance writing for Ecom Engine, and I was just doing like general blog content, that kind of stuff. And I found that a mutual friend who ended up being one of my best friends after all this was a retail arbitrage seller.
Okay.
So somebody I knew sold on Amazon. So I said, let's work together. And can I hook your Seller Central account up to these tools? And he was like, sure, but you've got to help me pack stuff and send it into Amazon. And I was like, deal. So I learned about, he taught me like how to pack a shipment, how to create a listing, how to create a shipping plan, how to source with the Amazon seller app. And he taught me a ton of stuff. And we learned some stuff together, learned about, you know, the transition into wholesale, the transition into private label, all that stuff. And in the same time, I got to know Ecom Engine's tools. And so they thought that was pretty groovy that I did that and took that initiative. And I ended up writing actually the first product guide, co-writing it with the product manager at the time for Restock Pro. So did a little technical writing for them. And then come 2016, they said, hey, we want you to come on full time. And I was like, doing content? And they were like, no, we want you to do business development. And I was like, okay, I'm a writer. And they were like, yeah, but that's not all you've done. Because I skipped the part where I used to host karaoke and DJ wedding receptions for 5 years. And I think that comes across in every like public interaction I have. And also I have sang karaoke at several industry conferences. So the cat's, cat's been out of the bag since 2016. I think the first conference I went to was Ecom Chicago in October of 2016. And what is Scanner Society now, used to be Scanner Monkey, had their annual karaoke party. And buddy, did I sing karaoke at that party.
I bet you did.
The cat was out of the bag. But they said, yeah, we want you to just, you know, talk to people in the industry and help us do this, this, and this, and run the affiliate program and all this stuff. And I said, okay. So since August 29th, 2016, I've been full-time with Ecom Engine. And my title is industry liaison because I work with agencies like Marknology, and I work with sellers, and I work with people who represent other software tools. I was born without a whole lot of competitive DNA, so I actually like a whole lot of our competitors a whole lot and say, you should check out their content because it's really good.
Yeah.
I do create content for Ecom Engine. I do all the webinars. And I'm working on the video strategy now, so people are going to be seeing my face a whole lot more, but hopefully faces of other people in our organization too. But it's just been this interesting progression into the digital world, but then especially into the Amazon world and understanding different types of sellers and their different pain points and the trajectory someone can take from, you know, you've got all those stories about I had $300, I had $200, and I built myself up, and now I've got a $8 billion business or whatever it is. You know, you've got stories like that. And as you know, because you've been in the industry for a long time, it used to be easier, you know?
Yeah.
It used to be a lot easier. And when Ecom Engine first got started, it was a lot easier. Jay created Feedback 5, which was our first tool in 2007. And I think it was available to sellers like between 2008 and 2009. And it was the first of its type of tool. No other tool like that existed. And he was just curious because he thought there ought to be a way to automate that. And, you know, sure enough, there was. And now lots of other people know that there's a way to automate that because it's a pretty crowded space now. But back then, there was no need for a marketing department because he was the only game in town. And it's still a very family oriented, very close, cozy culture kind of company. And that's what took a completely, I am never working for another company again person, which is what I was. I will work for myself until I starve because I will never, ever work for another company, which made me say, okay, yeah, I'll do that because I like the culture and I got to work with
to use the tools anyway.
Yeah, and I love to work with Amazon sellers. I just think that whether it's a retail arbitrage seller, whether it's a wholesaler, whether it's a private label person, whether it's a brand, small brands, mid-sized brands, large-sized brands, I feel like there's this DNA that they all share that has this risk-taking, brave thing to it. And because, I mean, you have to be brave to sell on Amazon. It's scary and it's difficult and it's hard to be successful, especially nowadays. And I feel like there's just this lineage that all of the sellers share, and it's that they have similar pain points. They have similar stories. They have vastly different stories. They have vastly different pain points, but they all have this fire in their belly. They all have this awesomeness that I just love. And I'm so cheesy about it. I mean, like, I'm like completely passionate about it and I'm totally cheesy about it. And actually during webinars, I say, you know, Amazon says that they're customer obsessed, but at EcomEngine, we're seller obsessed. And when I said that for the very first time, I meant it from like the bottoms of my toes. And that's why I love working with agencies that work with Amazon sellers, because I feel like nowadays you're a brand, you're an emerging brand, you're a launching brand, and you need all of the tools and all of the expertise to be successful. And it's just really interesting going from sort of like a general, yeah, I'll write for your blog. Yeah, I'll write a white paper for you. Yeah, I'll write your script for this thing, or I'll write that your speech for this thing that you're doing. I'll update your LinkedIn profile. I'll write your resume. I'll write your web content. Like a marketing general. Yeah, I'll do your social media. Darn it. Cause I hate doing social media. I hate it. it's not social media's fault. It's just, I like to use social media personally for fun. And when you have to do it for work, it kind of takes all the fun out of it.
Yeah.
But I was just a generalist. I was just like a digital marketing generalist. Yeah, okay. I don't know. Let's set up some Google ads. I'll build your WordPress site. You know, I mean, like all of it. And then to get so niche, to get like so completely niche has been really interesting. And it was totally unintentional. It just sort of happened, almost like fate. It was serendipity. And this is where I'm supposed to be. This is the industry I'm supposed to be in. I believe that wholeheartedly. It's just that I had no inkling that I would end up here.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, me neither. I was trying to be in a band 5 years. That was like my first business really, and creating and learning marketing and things like that. And then I was getting a degree in computer science so that when I was really good at it, like as a kid, I was like building computers, like, you know, with DOS and just way back in the day. And when I was overseas in Africa, I was like hardwiring all these computers and networks together before it was like plug and play. And so when I was like traveling and working three jobs and trying to be in a band, like I wanted to have a backup plan. I wanted to, you know, get educated in my family. That wasn't done by everyone. So that was something I wanted to check off my list and to get a degree. And I chose like computer science, networking and security because it was like easy for me. You know, it wasn't really like my plan. It was just like I can do that while I'm doing other stuff kind of thing. And got the degree, started that job as a network operations. I worked in a NOC. So, you know, essentially a network specialist, and I hated it. And so I just took a leap of faith and tried out at a startup. That was 8 years ago. And you know, we did $1 million in sales, and the next time we did $1 million in sales. And I was like, I love e-commerce. And it wasn't even, I think it was just the speed of e-commerce. And it's like, you're talking about this camaraderie that we all have, or like, you know, this legacy that anyone that's been on selling on Amazon has, you know, has some of that in them, that bravery, that courage. That's e-commerce to me in general. And I think that I found Amazon where just no one had been before. It was kind of like I was traveling west, you know, whenever I came across Amazon. And I'm like, there's this huge world out here that no one's brave enough to go because there's, you know, lions and tigers and bears out here. You know, and so for me, it was like, yes, I want to go in. I want to learn that. And I think even now my mindset has been, you know, obsessive about Amazon for years and years and years. And now it's becoming
Amazon is a huge piece of the pie, but a piece of the pie for e-commerce and digital marketing. You know, and it's how do we take all these traditional things that we already know very well, like SEO or photography or video, in their own buckets, like, you know, videography has its own buckets, but how do we take these specialties to Amazon, and how do we make these, like, you know, these strengths and all these areas work together? Because they're all great on their own, but.
Well, and I think it's important to take it off Amazon too. I mean, Amazon is a huge, like you said, a huge piece of the puzzle, but it's not the only piece of the puzzle. And what I have a hard time getting across to sellers or brands is that what you do off Amazon isn't always going to completely make you win on Amazon, right?
Right.
So, like, you've got to have the videos. You've got to have the right product photography. You've got to have your brand voice. You've got to have your storefront looking rad. And I love what you guys do with that, by the way. I'm like, oh, that's a Marnology one. I know that.
Do you remember the first time we met?
Yeah.
Do you remember where it was?
Wasn't it at Boulder?
It was before that.
Was it?
I met you, but I don't think you knew us as Marknology. So me and Veronica came to, and Brooklyn came to Minneapolis. Were you at?
Yes.
You were speaking there.
Midwest.
Or you were just there, or did you just have a booth?
We just had a booth in 2018, and in 2019 I spoke. And I met you guys and I was like, man, those are cool guys. Those are cool. Because, I mean, you guys are all like hip and cool, and like I've never been that cool. So I'm just like,
whatever.
Okay, well, the cool people are here now. And then it turns out you're related, and it's just like, okay, that's the coolest family ever. And then we actually met, you know, like, again.
Yeah, in Boulder. Yeah.
In Boulder. But we'd already started kind of working together too. And I'd already decided that Veronica is the coolest girl I've ever met. So, you know, that had already happened. and then you spoke in Boulder, and I was like, okay, he's like really smart. So that was cool, and that was a cool experience. Actually, my mom was at that conference. You guys were really super nice to my mom.
I'm gonna bring it up. Yeah, she was really cool. And, you know, we work with our mom too. So
yeah, I know. I know.
It was just cool. You know, there's a lot. As Amazon gets more traction, like more and more companies come out, you know, like every day as far as softwares. You know, we were talking about one on our mastermind call earlier today. And it's just like, we're constantly trying these softwares, like whether it's a feedback software, whether it's a restock software, whether it's an advertising software, whether it's a dashboard software, like, you know, as Amazon consultants or people that are trying to help sellers on Amazon, it's been like, I want to know all the tools. What are all the things at my disposal to help me do my job better, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that really what it comes down to is just, you know, finding people on the other side of those companies that actually care about people and businesses and sellers, and less just about the tool itself sometimes. You know, I'm always like, for me, a big part of it is, and I honestly haven't done this with Feedback 5 because that tool has been out so long. Like, it's one of the first. It's, you know, they know they're perfected. It's not something that just hit the scene, if that makes sense. But before, it was like these little things would come out that you're like, okay, this is a huge advantage. I can look up a seller. I can do this, you know. But really, it's will we innovate together? Because it's still the Wild West. And it's like, you know, we're out here in the streets, so to speak, like, you know, fighting the Amazon fight. And there's these things that come up. It's about really finding partners on all sides that are like just ultimately trying to do a good job, you know, for sellers, and actually care about doing a good job. And, you know, that's what I've loved about Ecom Engine and our relationship from, you know, it started from agency to, you know, software as a service. But now we're friends, you know, we're in a mastermind, you know, we email back and forth about different things. And I think that that's what, you know, to anyone out there listening that's trying to find, you know, what companies to partner with, or, you know, what service to use when there's 1,000 out there. It's really just about finding one that fits your culture and, you know, how you want to work.
That's a really good point. We have internal learn and grow sessions once a month. And the CS department, which is a wonderful group of people in our company, they are conscientious and they are lovely and they are awesome. But they were like, why don't you, Liz, tell us a little bit about our, like, our main partners, you know, because we're getting ready to launch our partners page, but there are going to be more people on it. And I was like, sure. And so I made a slide deck. It's totally hokey, but I had like glamour shots of you guys from your website because your website's beautiful. And it's funny because I was talking about the people that we choose to partner with the closest are the people who are most aligned with our values. You know, we're inbound, we're helpful first, we're all about exceeding expectations, we're all about answering questions openly and honestly, we're all about helping, just helping. And I can't tell you how many times I've talked to somebody and I've listened to their pain points and I've listened to their struggle and I've realized, you know, there's this other tool that's going to be perfect for you. And it's not always, I say I'm the worst salesperson ever. I don't drive everyone away from our tools. Don't get me wrong. Like I drive plenty of people to them, but in those situations, it's your responsibility as a software provider to never try to put somebody in your software that doesn't fit there.
Right.
That's just one of the tenets of being a responsible software company. So partnering with you guys has been great because you know which of your clients need what and you know what our capabilities are. And you've built a really fantastic team. I mean, you've got your family and they're fantastic, but then you've built a fantastic team after that. And we've got a certain customer success advisor who jumps on every ticket that you guys have. So when I was doing my little presentation, because, you know, Rachel's really kind of taken up the reins, I was doing my little presentation and I was like, and this is Andrew and he never sleeps because he owns a brand and he's hosting a podcast and he started this agency and he helps Amazon sellers. And I think he still plays in a band and he might run marathons. I'm not sure. He's an international traveler. This is his sister. She hangs out in Berlin sometimes and she's like a model and she's awesome and like going through. And then I was like, Hey, friends, it's Rachel. Look, it's Rachel. Cause they work together so much. And so it was exciting for them to see. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't a big presentation. It wasn't a big list of the people that we work with most often, but I wanted our team to be familiar with the people who we advocate, who advocate us and who we have a common approach to the industry and approach to technology. And that's just delightful about you guys. It's just really, really delightful.
I think it's a kind of test of like how we, a testament to how we work, you know, like our goal is to, you know, not just have jack of all trades, but like, you know, we've dedicated Rachel to understanding Feedback 5 and understanding how to integrate that with clients. And, you know, we set aside dedicated time to know our tools, you know, and tools are always evolving. And if it's not your business, you know, you can only know it so well. But we do our best to be able to, you know, whenever we give advice, like if we're ever having to defend why we chose this or why we did that, you know, I want all of our people to be able to be like, well, we thought that was the best decision to make at the time, you know, based on like what we knew. I tell them if we always make decisions with that in mind, like we'll always be okay. You know, yeah. If you're making the best decision that you can and you put in effort, like, you know, if that comes back or, hey, like, you know, maybe we got suspended for sending out reviews or, you know, like all the things that can happen, right? Like all the no-nos. We'll work it out. Like, I'm sure if we were, you know, doing the right thing that this is, you know, something that we'll figure out. So, you know, that's the danger we get in when we're giving people advice. And a lot of our brands like live off of our advice. You know, we're a boutique kind of agency that's, you know, very collaborative and very like, should we try, they, you know, we know what's best for them kind of thing, versus other agencies, maybe they do a very specific thing, you know, we're very integrated. And it just comes down to having a team that feels like, you know, from us to our partners, if you get on the phone or your customer success person gets on the phone with Rachel and one of our clients, it's as if Marknology was on the phone the whole time, you know? So, that's really cool. That's really cool. And thanks for all those nice things she said. I swear I didn't pay her to say them.
But you guys are a pleasure to work with. As the fact that you represent some really cool brands and I keep buying stuff from them and, you know, not like.
What are you trying? I can see you on screen, but what were you eating right before we got
started?
I was
eating this zesty Mediterranean popcorn. It's this spicy flavor with chilies and herbs. It's wicked spicy, but it is really, really tasty. And
did you
it's
just
not
get the variety pack on Amazon?
I got the variety pack, so it came with the feta one, feta and herbs. It came with the thyme flavored one and the chili and herbs. The chili and herbs is my favorite. And it only has 0.5 grams of saturated fat and 3 grams of dietary fiber, which is pretty rad. I also have a garden steak in my backyard from X Heart because I met Michael. You might have to edit that out. I don't know.
No.
But I met him at the brand boot camp that Shannon did in Los Angeles in January of 2019. And he was telling me about his brand. And I was like, oh my gosh, do you have those things that you put in your yard and they collect sun all day long and then at night they glow? And he was like, I have so many of those. And I was like, those are my favorite things to put in my yard. People think that I am from West Virginia, and I am actually from West Virginia. So I'm allowed to make that joke because I was born in West Virginia and I lived there till I was 5, and I go back at least 5 times a year to visit when I can, when it's not COVID-19. But whatever, I love those glowy things and I've bought them cheap at like AC Moore when it was still in business. This one from X Heart, no kidding, it is a champ. It collects the sun. The solar panel never gets dirty. It glows. It's green. It's beautiful. I want like 20 of them to line my patio. And that Instagram is so on point with the garden gnomes. I am actually forbidden from any more garden gnomes at the risk of damaging my marriage. So I have to keep it. I have one gnome. He's the only gnome. When he breaks, I'll buy another gnome, but this is a one gnome house. Unfortunately, it's a deep bummer for me.
I got a couple of stories for you. I have a real estate business as well. And we've started using the gnomes as like the housewarming gifts for new home buyers.
So you're a realtor?
I'm not. I have a property management business called AKC Co. We have about 22 Airbnbs and the rest are traditional rentals.
Do you ever sleep?
Sleep is for the weak. I don't know. I don't believe that, but you know, I'm just trying to say something there.
I'm old. I need like 7-8 hours a night. I just do. You know,
everything I do is digital though. Just so you know, like I'm in the same space, and that's why I bring it up. Like, Airbnb is a business that's ran with, you know, photography and listings and systems and property management. You know, it's like Airbnb is a easy system compared to Amazon, right? So for me, it's just all the algorithms are kind of the same in that regard. And if you know photography and SEO on one platform, you know photography and SEO on another platform. I wouldn't say that generically applies, but in these type of search and get results, you know, kind of way. And then, you know, we own Landlocked, the apparel company, which for me more than anything has been, it was my own brand outside of the agency service side that I got to learn with, right? So I was able to try all the techniques and things I wanted to try, and learn wholesaling and learn retail and learn, you know, profitability and all that kind of stuff when it was my dollar and on my side. So I do a lot of things, but you know, honestly, a lot of what I do is the same in them.
I didn't know about Landlocked until I was going back. I know. And there's a shirt I want, just so you know. But I was going through the website, getting ready for that Learn and Grow I told you about. And it was like, Andrew. I was like, did Andrew always have his own section? I don't know that Andrew always had his own section. Like when I first met them, I don't think you always had. So I looked at the Andrew section and I'm like, Andrew is a rock star, and look at this clothing line. This is amazing. And I knew that you must have started with that. I knew that like that's how you work, that you would have done that and you would have learned on that. And then you would have applied that knowledge to other brands because you have to prove it to yourself first because that's how your brain works. But I was like, this stuff is really, really cool. Because of course he wouldn't have some crap brand, you know, like he would not have some crap brand that's like, you know, generic-ish toothpaste with its own label on it or something like that. He would have something really, really cool and hip that you would want.
Well, I can't take all the credit. You know, I've definitely been building it with Veronica and Ro, you know, a photographer on our team. You know, Ro, Martinology has been in business almost 6 years, and I can just remember, like, it's almost like when people find digital marketing and it's their thing, it's like they love it. They either love it or hate it. They don't dabble, really, you know. And I was trying to grow the businesses before my sisters moved here. I'd been in business almost 3 years, and Ro and Veronica moved, and they were a big catalyst for change in Marknology. And one thing I really needed was social content and branding and things like that. But I was trying to run the landlocked Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And Ro was like, I'll take that over. And she'd always been like a hobbyist photographer, you know, like always had a camera around and things, but not a professional. And she really just picked up landlocked maybe like 3 or 4 years ago. And just really started shooting models, shooting all those shoots.
She's awesome.
Turned just absolutely amazing. And that really just came from landlocked. You know, it came from needing to fill needs in the team and like, just like, what can I do and what do we need? And just watched her turn into like an absolute rock star in regards to photography and Amazon photography and graphics and things like that. But all started with, you know, just trying to fill a hole on Instagram.
That's always been something that I try not to feel envy, but I've always, as a word person, as a person who thinks about words and the intentions of words and has made a successful living using words, I'm not visual. I mean, you can see the wall behind me. These are decals that I keep buying on Amazon, and they're supposed to start, like, you see where the edges, they're supposed to start at the ceiling and then cascade down in a really lovely, soothing pattern. And I was just like, I like that one there and that one there. And if I do enough of them, it won't matter that it's not like a good designer eye, because there'll be enough in the background that nobody will be able to tell where it stops and where it ends. So
I think it looks pretty cool from here.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I keep buying them. I just bought another 2 sheets off of Amazon.
I love it. We're always trying to do strange things in our Airbnbs. And I say strange, I just mean like, you know, make them different, just like we would on Amazon, like, you know, value propositions or, you know, how to make this thing unique.
Themes. I love Airbnbs with themes. Decals are a good way to go because these will peel right off and they won't damage the paint. So you could even switch them out, you know, and you can put inspirational quotes on the walls. And actually over there, I'll text you a picture later, but right around the light switch, there are kittens breaking out of the wall, because that's not going to be on camera. So I can be, because my husband said, what are you in college? So thanks, Andrew, for just echoing that statement.
I'm sorry, but earlier when we were talking about mac and cheese recipes.
I'm a 43-year-old, 18-year-old. Thank you. And my aesthetic is just messy. It's clutter. That's the way it reflects my brain. My brain is full of stuff, and it's a delightful place for me to crawl around. And I want my living space to be the same way. That's how I roll. I've got 47 typewriters in my house.
Really?
I collect antique typewriters. That's cool. And they're in various states of disarray, and some of them are the cool upright ones, and some of them, but like on the other, I have a piano too, because I play the piano, and on either side of my piano, all the way up to like, you know, side table size, is just stacks of typewriters in their cases with a lamp on top. And my idea is, when I retire, if I ever do, because of the aforementioned school loan, it's very, very unlikely that I will be able to ever retire. But my idea for retirement is that I'm going to have this fabulous library with all my books. Because the last time I moved, I had 75 boxes of books. I just hoard books. I can't throw away a book. I'll give away a book. If you want that book, I'll give it to you. But I cannot.
Because you value words a lot.
And I can't, and I like the smell of the book, and I like the smell. I'm very smell driven too. And I like the smell of the typewriters. I like the way the ribbon smells. And I like the idea that I have no idea what people have typed on that typewriter.
Right.
love letters, job offers, suicide notes, whole novels. I have one from 1918 that I've just convinced myself belonged to Ernest Hemingway. I've just convinced myself that he took it around and he typed on it. And that's probably what he wrote The Sun Also Rises on. And that's just like what I'm going with. Of course, that's not true because it would have cost more than $25 at the antique store up the street. But I have all these typewriters and I have this idea that I'm going to have this fabulous library that's got all my books on it. And it's going to have this wonderful table and I'm going to have all these little drawers with different components for typewriters because I'm going to learn about how the typewriters need to be repaired and I'm just going to tinker with typewriters.
Just keep collecting because worst case scenario, I'll help you sell them and pay off your school loan one of these days.
They're not, you know, it's funny because I had a relative that sent me a Facebook, you know, marketplace listing and it's like this typewriter and I've got one just like it. Would sell for as much as $5,000. And I'm like, no, it would not, you know, because no, they wouldn't. I've bought these things. People have given me typewriters. You know how that you like, if you say you like a thing, like I like the troll dolls, then you end up with a whole room full of like I like monkey shaped home furnishings. And I've got like 8 monkey lamps downstairs because frankly, I keep buying monkey lamps. Nobody gave me a monkey lamp. I bought those monkey lamps. That's just true confessions here.
I appreciate the honesty.
But the typewriters, I think that it would be a really nice retirement job to play some music and tinker around. And I'll have those glasses on that people wear when they're painting models. Yeah. I'll have those on. And then somebody will come in and talk to me and I'll look up and I'll have those. And it'll be like Ghostbusters 2. When Dana's painting the painting and Janusz goes over and you know, like Ghostbusters 2, if I can fit a reference to that Eddie Izzard or Buffy the Vampire Slayer into anything, I'll do it. So
me and Veronica went to, made me think of it, old typewriters. We went to Austria. Okay. On our trip to Berlin or like to Germany. And we went to this coffee house and we were just trying to find coffee, but it was like a holiday. I can't remember what the holiday was. It was around December. And this was like supposed to be the very first coffee house where like Jewish writers would come to write their like newspapers or books or like, I don't know exactly the history, but, and forgive me for that. I wasn't prepared to bring this up, but it was just like the coolest thing. All of the servers were like in these tuxes. Like we were definitely underdressed. You know, we didn't know really that we were stepping back in time. You know,
it was just that and put it in the show notes, you know, because people are going to want to go there when the world opens back up.
It was really incredible. Just to know, like, this is kind of where it started, where people were like, we're going to go here and write, you know, and it was pretty inspiring to see, like, to think of those people and those men when they were writing about, you know, World War II and different things like that. I think it was right before that kind of when this coffee shop got its popularity. I always think about that. I want to change gears just a little bit. You started with SEO. You're a writer. Okay. That's your background. Like you've been doing it forever. You know, when I used to get super pumped up, when back in the day, Amazon reviews, like Amazon changed the way they did things. Remember, we talked about it being way easier. And because people used to be able to just give away product on Amazon in order to get reviews that would then boost the listings to be super powerful.
That was before ReviewGate, October 2016, day that lives in infamy.
2016. So for a lot of companies, it sucked because this was what they had built their models on. This is, you know, how they were profitable. This is like how people launch products, private label products. For me, as someone outside of that, my business model wasn't built around just reviews or things like that. I liked actually like branding on Amazon as best I could back then, because we still didn't have all the tools we have now. But I was trying to push people that SEO mattered on Amazon. And I promise you, in the conversations I had, the things I was like, I didn't have really, I wasn't a thought leader. No one like, you know, listened to what I had to say back then. But it was in the SEO world, you know, people were just putting up single lines of text, or it would be like, it matters in the title, but not the search terms and all those kinds of things. And why even worry about those if reviews carry the most weight anyway, right? So, but when ReviewGate happened, in my opinion, SEO started mattering and people started caring about SEO because they had to get their listings to be seen outside of just these reviews. What have you seen change like in the same way since like, you know, 2014 till now in regards to SEO and stuff like that?
It wasn't too long after that, though, that it very much became a pay-to-play platform, right? So that mattered in terms of advertising, too. But if you think about SEO and you think about keywords the way Amazon at their very best would think about them, the what you have to think about is what are people typing into the search bar to find, what are they typing in to find what you're selling, you know? And then you've got to choose the right words to be not just what they're looking for, but just in case they type wrong or just in case they don't know quite what they're looking for. It's a very complicated puzzle, and it's not like the 2008, 2009, let's just put Richmond, Virginia attorney in an article about strange laws and say, and if you have questions, you might want to ask a Richmond, Virginia attorney about it, you know, and it's like hand-handed. And Amazon, as Google got smarter, I think Amazon kind of took a cue and said, yeah, we're not going to let you do just rubbish in your listings. You know, we'll let you do these really long tail titles. And that actually happened after I got into the industry where people just started like putting every keyword possible in their product title and then maximizing their bullet points to the whole, what is it, 500 characters and just like making this unreadable gobbledygook that if a thinking person, not a bot, not an algorithm, not a shopper, a buyer, a customer on Amazon is looking at that listing. Because as a shopper on Amazon, and I have been for years and years and years, I have always read product descriptions. I have always read bullet points. I read that before I read reviews. My husband's the other way around. He reads he looks at star rating. He reads the top, you know, the top three five-star reviews and the top 3 1-star reviews, if there are any, after he's sorted by Prime, because he will only shop Prime. And I, now that I know this industry, I feel like I'm not a muggle anymore. Like I get it. And I realize that there's so much goodness to be found that's not, you know, not Prime, because it might be merchant fulfilled or they might not. There's just good stuff you can find. So I don't just filter by Prime unless it's something I need tomorrow or I need in 2 days. But I've always read the listing thoughtfully because I expect the seller to create a thoughtful listing. And I've done a lot of work since I entered the industry with people who talk about optimizing your listings and telling your story. And one person, I don't mean to like throw people's names around, but Emma Shermer-Tremier did this wonderful webinar with me where she was like talking about telling a story with your listing. And actually at that Boulder event that we went to, Faith Rumor was talking about, like, if you've got, it was a food brand specific conference. And she's like, you've got an opportunity with your listing to make somebody want your product. So while SEO might be an important part of the equation, you also have to think about the human experience involved with reading your listing. Does it entice the buyer to click buy now? Does it make people want to buy? You've got to find that balance between the smart SEO equation that helps you rank better and the listing that invites not only a customer for the first time, but a repeat customer and an evangelist of your brand. It's a tight, thin rope to walk. And luckily there are agencies like yours that can help people navigate it, because I would write the floweriest, most non-SEO, most ridiculous listing ever if I sold on Amazon, and probably nobody would ever buy my stuff because I would get literary quotes in there somewhere and probably make some sort of movie reference and talk about how this is going to change your life because it's an M&M dispenser or whatever.
Well, if you had a video on the listing, I would probably buy it, because I'd be like, she probably makes cool stuff and I'm going to buy it. I do feel like when you You know, there's all these little things. Whenever you're obsessed with a platform, you notice all the little things, you know, but it's almost like if I see a listing with a crazy big title or bullet points, and those do help SEO, but they hurt, like they're hard on the eyes or like on the mobile, they don't show up. I'm like, I know that this is one, an agency's helping them, or this is a private label seller, because the big brands are rarely have anything like that, right? The big brands, the known brands aren't doing that. Because mainly because they don't know how to do SEO, but it's also a way to just like, you know, quickly tell the difference. And, you know, you talked about, I think the first article you wrote was
top 10 hairstyles.
Top 10 hairstyles. Okay. So like, that's how Google works. That's how the web works. People are like, what are the top 10 hairstyles of 2020? Like, how do I cut a fade in my, into my hair? You know, how do I, what's the best mask, you know, to wear right now? People ask questions and people, you know, search queries. And on Amazon, they just type in face masks, you know, and then they filter by men's, by women's, by price point, by review point, you know, and they're kind of just going through all these checks. So it's completely different platform, but like the SEO still matters, you know, and sometimes we've hit it right on the head where the team's written a listing and you get the keywords just right and the photography is just right and the reviews are just right. And it's actually a quality product. And, you know, our conversion rate's like 45%. You know, and it's just like, what happened on that one? And most of the time it's just that we're not getting any traffic to the listing, that isn't in a place to buy, you know, it's like, it's getting the right people there. And it, if you're ever getting a ton of traffic and not having that, it's sure you're getting a lot of people, but you're not getting the right crowd, you know? So, I just think it's, we call it the Marknology effect, as far as like the way that we translate what that art and science is between, you know, good sales copy and content writing. You know, there's a right. difference between good sales copy and content writing, and I'm sure you know that. And what's the best for this brand? You know, is this brand a technical brand? Is it scientific, like supplement? Is it, you know, like bass shoe slippers that you wear to the lake? You know, so like, if it's funny, be funny. If it's serious, be serious. You know,
is it a thing you wear on your wrist that repels sharks? Because how cool is that? And how much fun would you have with that?
I'm just not going to test it myself. Like, I'm not going to test it myself.
I mean, I'll wear it just in case, but I'm not going to like roll up to a shark and be like, hey.
Right. Plus it's stylish. So
check this out.
Sharks, be off.
Shark off. I loved it. A lot of people hated it. But like when the Google algorithm started to really shift, that was between 2009 and 2011, lots of stuff happened, right? And then between 2011 and 2013, lots of other stuff happened. And you kind of went from, in the Google space, there was this formula and you included a keyword a certain amount of times. And it didn't really matter if the copy was good. It didn't really matter if it had a lot of context. It didn't really matter. It didn't really matter. It had to be good enough. At least that was what I was told by the agencies that I was writing for. It's like, you're not doing rocket science. You're not writing the Great American Novel, just knock out 75 articles about mesothelioma as fast as you can possibly write them. You know, I mean, it was that kind of world. And then it got to the point where you need to be thoughtful and you need to include references, and it needs to be written in a really readable, consumable way. And all of a sudden, quality content became more important in the Google space, and it continues to be, and it continues to be rewarded. The better content you have, the more it is rewarded in terms of search, as long as you're doing the right things. But I think that anything you write, I mean, and obviously I'm biased because words are important to me, but I think anything you write, if you write it well and you know the rules to make it rank, it's not good enough to just know the rules to make it rank. You have to be able to tell the story. You have to be able to write it in a way where somebody reads that and says, dang, you know, that was really well written.
Makes a call to action.
Yeah. Well, and it has a pace. It's got easy readability. It's broken up in a way that makes it easy to understand. There are transitions between paragraphs. It's actually a written piece that you could get graded on. You know, I mean, I've taught lots of composition classes at the college level because you do that when you've got a master's degree. You're like, okay, sure, I'll teach. And you have to pay your dues and teach enough composition classes for them to let you teach a literature class. So you do that. But I mean, when I was reading freshman composition, I was thinking about, okay, well, I take the harshestly, you know, the things that have been, that have received the harshest criticism in my writing career and bounce them up against each other and realize that what these, they might have to write something in APA format and it's got to have a works cited page and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, when you write something, it's got to have a clear thesis statement and supporting argument. Everything does. And an Amazon listing has to tell you what problem that particular item solves. It's got to tell you why it's different from all the other products like it. It's got a point too. There's a common thread among all of the content that you would ever create. And what it really comes down to is how well does it tell the story?
Right. Storytelling is at the core and the center of everything, you know? And I just wish I had paid more attention to photography early on. I think a lot of brands weren't. And so I didn't as well when I was like following competition and, you know, you're just like trying to find other people pushing the pace and see what they're doing and, you know, try to innovate yourself. But photography is a huge part of that storytelling. You know, for us, it's bringing the copy and the images together and helping people make a decision, you know, helping people know exactly and clearly what this is. And just like you said, I think with anything, it's like there's an advantage to being a fast mover. You know, we're talking about e-commerce that's been on a blazing, you know, COVID's only going to speed things up. It's been on a blazing pace. And it's like first all you had to do, like I think I put up 1 million car parts by myself, like 1 million car parts that you all experience or buy online. Like 8 years ago, I was just distributor after manufacturer, getting their entire catalogs and putting them up, using Excel to concatenate, you know, product descriptions by the hundreds and thousands, you know, because these things hadn't been done. And so, you know, you're winning simply by being there. But now, like as it progresses, just like the web, and you have to be better at Google and you can't just keyword stuff and, you know, you can't just have 100,000 backlinks and make your pages rank. You have to actually write good quality content. And they're like, hey, it's better to spend a week on one blog than it is to crank out 7 blogs once a week. And I think the same goes for Amazon, you know, just to bring it home to Amazon is, it used to be that we just had products up or you threw them in a kit or, you know, you did things like that. And now it's the next level. It's consumer behavior too changing in regards to who is this company and, what are they about and what's their story and, you know, what's their social media or their web looking like? You know, I see their reviews, but I don't trust reviews, you know, because we're in a society where people aren't trusting and people want to know who they're buying from and how is the, like, what's the quality of the products and are people paid a living wage and, you know, all those things. And I think that to continue to grow, to continue to be great, to continue to pass, you know, whoever's coming up next, you have to take it to the next level. And that's what I'm pushing brands to do online is you have to go to the next level, whether that's video, whether that's better photography. We got to hear your story.
And I will say that I will rhapsodize about the importance of the written word all day long, but we do live in a world where photography and video are of paramount. What is it? Some like 436%. People are more 436% more likely to watch a video than they are to read content, yeah. You know? So that's such an important part of the equation and something that you guys do beautifully is incorporate those visual elements and the videos along with artfully written listings. And I love that about you, but the visual component is so important. The product photography and the infographics and the design of the A plus content and the videos that are incorporated, that's all necessary in 2020. It's all, especially and it's great that Amazon is giving more opportunities for brands to visually represent their brand and their products, because on a marketplace where you can't pick something up and hold it and smell it and, you know, try it on and all that stuff, that's super. And what I always told people about product reviews was product reviews are there because you can't pick it up and you can't try it on and you can't smell it and you can't rub it against your cheek and see if it's soft. You know, I mean, that's what the product reviews are there for, is they're to tell you that. But now there are these visual things you can do where you can say, it looks like this. And then if people get it and it doesn't look like that, then they can leave you a bad review. And then that hurts. But if you're a good brand with good products and you visually represent your products in a really appealing way, you win. You just do.
Truth in the pudding, right? Well, we're almost up on our time, but I want you to leave us with one answer, if you will. This question is just answer it however you want. But if you had a superpower, you know, a superpower, let's keep it to the digital space, as being an entrepreneur of yourself. If you had a superpower, in regards to this space, maybe it's writing, maybe it's been creativity. Like, what do you think has allowed you to flourish, you know, when it comes to growing and taking on new things in this space?
I think it's, so what would I want my superpower to be, or what I think my superpower is?
What superpower do you have?
I think that my superpower is listening to and understanding people.
Okay.
And that sounds generic, but it's so important in this industry, because it's so easy to get wrapped up in what you're good at and what your tools are good at and what your KPIs are and what, you know, everybody else is saying and who your competitors are and all that kind of stuff. But what makes me understand this industry and makes me understand the people in this industry and makes me think harder, try harder, and develop new ways to help is by listening and understanding and being open to conversations that might not be the easiest conversations to have, but it's basically just loving this industry and loving the people in it. And they have empowered me to be, yes, as cheesy as any one person has ever been, but also totally committed and totally obsessed with this industry.
Liz, I love it. I love your colorful response to that one. It's been a pleasure getting to share you with, you know, our followers and anyone listening.
Well, you know, I'll talk to you anytime, Andrew.
Yeah, I know. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. And once again, thank you to our sponsor, Startup Hustle. You can find them at fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordable. Fullscale is a great option for you if you're trying to outsource your development. I've used them. I know lots of people that have. You won't be disappointed. Liz, thank you. We'll see you next time.
All right. Thanks.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.